feeling, so we had to do something about it. All right.
There you go.
Okay, so we're back. So welcome to the evening session of the Sacramento Intergroup of Overeaters Anonymous 27th Annual Retreat here in Tahoe, presenting the ABCs of abstinence. And this evening, we're going to go ahead and start with irritated versus bitterly disappointed. And I think that these two feelings are really, really important because in my personal experience, our feelings are our greatest guide back to our seat of power. Our feelings are also our greatest guide away from our seat of power. So every time we have a feeling, we have nothing more than a choice. Our feelings are nothing more than a buffet of thoughts. Do I want that one? Do I want that one? Do I want that one? So whatever we choose, it's our choice. And we have all power. Remember that. We have all power to choose. So, for instance, we're up here in Tahoe. So let's say I said, hey, everybody, come on down to Studio City. So you drive down to Studio City, and you see that you can get, you can go and you can go back home to Sacramento. You can decide to go, hey, you know what? I'm going to go over to Yosemite, or somebody says, hey, I'm going to go to San Francisco. Or, you know what? I'm not going to go to Studio City. I'm going to go all the way to Tijuana. I want to go and shop and have a great time in Tijuana. Okay? So all those exit signs that says you can get off here, you can go off there, they're nothing but choices, right? They're nothing more than indicators. Do you want to get off here? Do you want to get off there? That's the same thing that your feelings are. Your feelings are not good, nor are they bad. They're nothing but choices and indicators. Do you want to go here or do you want to go there? So if I'm walking down the street with you guys and I have a rock in my shoe and I decide to not say anything to you about it and I walk around with a shoe, with a rock in my shoe, and I decide to walk around like that for 6 months, 8 months, 2 years, what's going to happen to my foot? It's literally going to fall off. Okay? Do we do that to our bodies? We do that. Okay? So I believe, I know you have not heard me this weekend once say anything about a goal weight. I don't believe in a goal weight. I'm not a statue. I know the minute I woke up this morning, tonight I'm going to weigh 2 pounds heavier. So what? You better get used to it. You better get used to gaining the weight and losing the weight. You better get used to living in a little circle like this. It's just a little dance. Just like she was singing her song. It's just a little dance. That's all it is. Sometimes you might get tired of that dance and you have to shift it up or slow it down or speed it up. But that's all it is. So if you decide to live in a healthy body weight range, it can be really, really easy. If you start getting out, you know, close to the edge and you put on a few more pounds, don't you think it would be much easier to slam on the brakes and get right back to center point? Okay? But many people, they don't want to pay attention to pound one or pound two, or three or four or five, six, seven, eight, nine, 50. Okay? So it's, remember, relapse is a process. It's not an event. It happens in our mind. Everything happens in our mind. Everything that we have experienced this weekend has happened in our mind. The life that we're living today is nothing but the sum total of the choices that we have made in the past. Our outer world is nothing more than a printout of our inner world. When I was obese, I made a lot of money, but my finances were a mess. My house was a mess. My business ran great. My personal life was a wreck. Anybody relate to that? I guarantee you that if you're obese, I don't care how much money you make, your finances are a mess, your house is a mess, your paperwork's a mess, your outer world is merely a printout of your inner world. I guarantee you, you clean up your head, boom. Everything outside cleans up. Okay? But please remember, the mind that got you into trouble cannot be the one to get you out. If you want to do this all by yourself and waste 11 years of your life trying to figure it out like I did, please call me. Don't do that. It's painful. Because there is a bottom below the bottom you know. Remember, every 100-pounder was once a 5-pounder. Don't ever forget that. Relapse, every person in relapse started with 2 pounds. I was working with a girl, and I said, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, sometimes it takes some group calls. You know, I was talking about Team 12-Step. And so she goes, blah, 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 I'm up 2 pounds. And I'm not worried. And I go, how do you feel about that? Feelings. Oh, she goes, oh, I'm fine. I'm fine about it. I go, you are? She goes, oh, yeah, I feel real great. I go, you're a fool. You know me, I like to be a little sassy. Stopped her dead in her tracks. I go, why do you think I'm saying that? She goes, I don't know, but because you're saying it, it concerns me. I go, what do you think happens after 2 pounds? So what's her answer was? I go, have you ever been here before? She goes, yeah. I go, you want to be there again? She goes, no. I go, don't you think it'd be easier to deal with 2 pounds than 20? She goes, yep. I go, don't you think she'd be much more concerned about 2 pounds right in here, right now? She goes, yeah. I go, wouldn't it be better if your gas gauge read 1/4 of a tank and an 1/8 of a tank? Don't you think it'd be better to do something about it right here, right now, than wait till you ran out of gas on the side of the road? She goes, yeah. Okay, so please remember these fine, fine things. There's something in us, because to some degree, we have to be a little mentally ill, right, to put this amount of food in us. But it works. It gets us out of right here, right now. Okay, so just remember, we're all the same. There's nobody better. There's nobody worse. We're all the same. We're just trusted servants. We're all trying to help each other. And let's see, I have till 9:30 tonight, right? Okay, so I want to say something to you. So much to say about this. Let's go ahead and get into the writing, into the reading of this. Who would like to read? Who hasn't read? Come on up. Microphone girl. Microphone girl. Okay, there you go.
Okay, you want to go back too?
Yeah, we're going to go ahead. We're going to go ahead and start on the back.
Oh.
Okay?
Okay.
And she's going to read to you. This is from the big book. Just introduce yourself and go ahead and start reading.
Oh, Rhonda Kimball-Skeeter.
Hey, Rhonda.
Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, Chapter 3, More About Alcoholism, pages 36 and 37. Yet he got drunk again. We asked him to tell us exactly how it had happened. This is his story. I came to work on Tuesday morning. I remember I felt irritated that I had to be a salesman for a concern I once owned. I had a few words with the brass, but nothing serious. And then I decided to drive to the country and see one of my prospects for a car. On the way, I felt hungry, so I stopped at a roadside place where they had a bar. I had no intention of drinking. I just thought I would get a sandwich. I also had the notion that I might find a customer for a car at this place, which was familiar, for I had been going to it for years. I had eaten there many times during the months I was sober. I sat down at the table and ordered a sandwich and a glass of milk. Still no thought of drinking. I ordered another sandwich and decided to have another glass of milk. Suddenly, the thought crossed my mind that if I were to put an ounce of whiskey in my milk, it couldn't hurt me on a cold stomach. I ordered a whiskey and poured it into the milk. I made it says, I'm not being entertained. and I reassured I was taking the risk of a full stomach. The experiment went so well that I ordered another whiskey and poured it into more milk. That didn't seem to bother me, so I tried another. Thus started my more journey to the asylum for Jen. Here was the threat of commitment, the loss of family, position, to say nothing of the intense mental and physical suffering his drinking always caused him. He had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic, yet all reasons for drinking were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea that he could take whiskey if only he mixed it with milk. Whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? You may think this is an extreme case. To us, it is not far-fetched, for this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. We have sometimes reflected more than Jen did on the consequences. But there was always the curious mental phenomenon that, parallel with our sound reasoning, there inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. Next day, we would ask ourselves, in all earnestness and sincerity, what could have happened? Again.
So that's an interesting story, don't you think? So I want you to compare that with the next one. You know what, look, if I don't get to sit, baby, you don't get to sit. She just tried to sit down, okay? So now she's got to read again. Okay, so here you go.
Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, Chapter 11, A Vision for You, pages 154 through 155. Bitterly discouraged, he found himself in a strange place. Discredited and almost broke, still physically weak and sober but a few months. He saw that his predicament was dangerous. He wanted so much to talk with someone, but whom? One dismal afternoon, he paced a hotel lobby wondering how his bill was to be paid. At the end of the room stood a glass-covered directory of local churches. Down the lobby, a door opened to an attractive bar. He could see the gay crowd inside. In there, he would find companionship and release. Unless he took some drinks, he might not have the courage to scrape the acquaintance. Scrape, thank you. An acquaintance, and would have a lonely weekend. Of course, he couldn't drink. But why not sit hopefully at a table? A bottle of ginger ale before him. After all, he had not been sober 6 months now. Had he not been sober 6 months now? Perhaps he could handle, say, 3 drinks. No more. Fear gripped him. He was on thin ice. And again, it was the old insidious insanity, that first drink. With a shiver, he turned away and walked down the lobby to the church directory. Music and gay chatter still floated to him from the bar. But what about his responsibilities, his family, and the men who would die because they would not know how to get well? Ah, yes, those other alcoholics. There must be many such in this town, too. He would phone a clergyman. His sanity returned, and thanked God. Selecting a church at random from the directory, he stepped into a booth and lifted the receiver. His call to a clergyman led him presently to a certain resident of the town, who, though formerly able and respected, was the near of alcoholic despair. It was the usual situation. Home in jeopardy, wife ill, children distracted, bills in arrears, and standing damaged. He had a desperate desire to stop, but he saw no way out, for he had earnestly tried many avenues of escape, painfully aware of being somehow abnormal. The man did not fully realize what it meant to be an alcoholic.
Read the asterisk.
This refers to Bill's first visit with Dr. Bob. These men later became co-founders of AA.
Great, thank you very much. So I want to show you that here is where Bill Wilson, can you see this photograph? This is a photograph of the Akron, Ohio. And there's a tiny little photograph on the bottom of the piece of paper. Okay, this is the photograph with the church directory at the Akron Hotel in Ohio. And the actual phone and the phone booth. Okay. And he stood at the turning point. And he had a choice. He had the same choice that Jim made. That Jim had. He had the same choice. Bill Wilson wasn't any different than Jim. I'm standing up here in front of you today with 25 years of back-to-back perfect abstinence. Sadly to say, I could have 36, but I wasted 11 years trying to figure it out. Don't ever forget that. There's nothing different about me from you. There's nothing special about me. The only difference is that I made to choose my higher power and sought power and the powerful every single day. That is the only difference. So, we're going to do a little writing exercise. And so, if you turn the paper over, this continues our section called Disconnecting from Your Ego and Addiction and Connecting to Your Higher Power. Irritated versus Bitterly Disappointed. Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, Chapter 3, More About Alcoholism, page 35. Quote, so we shall describe some of the mental states that precede a relapse into drinking, for obviously this is the crux of the problem. Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, Chapter 2, There is a Solution, page 23. Quote, therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. We have just read the irritated and bitterly disappointed stories. And that's my title for them. So this is, you know, so if you go, hey, mom, and it's like, go, I haven't ever heard of that. This is just how I name it. So I'd like for you now to break into small groups and break into new groups that you didn't break into earlier. And I want you to list out, what are the key feelings? What are the thoughts? What are the actions, the attitudes, the processes which led to disaster again for Jim versus the miracle of Bill Wilson and the billions, not a few, but billions of people he continues to help today. Discuss, brainstorm, and list our mental states that precede the wins and the relapses. Select one person to write down the group's comments and have a group member share the group's findings with the rest of the workshop. So we're going to go ahead and break into those groups and we'll do the writing on that, and then we'll have, you know, one person from each group come up and share on that. So go ahead and break up into new groups, maybe groups of four or five. And Rick, wherever you are, can you stop the recording? Rick. Turn me off.
Ah, there it is. Okay. Can I go? Can this go hot? You ready?
No.
Okay. Isn't
that right?
I can't.
Okay, great. Okay, so now we're going to hear, just to kind of reiterate, this is where we left off, is that we're going to come back and talk a little bit about what happened? What were the feelings? What were the emotions that happened with Jim and what happened with Bill? Why'd one win? Why did one lose? So go ahead and introduce yourself and share with us with what your group had to say.
Okay. Hi, I'm Suzanne, a compulsive overeater.
Hey, Suzanne.
So Jim, he was irritated because he was demoted. He was hungry. He justified stopping by the bar that he'd been to several times. And had stayed sober, and he was ignoring his HP voice many times. He was dishonest with himself, and so he failed to listen, and he went in. That was his demise. Bill, on the other hand, he was bitterly discouraged, and he rationalized at first entering the bar, but he listened to his HP. He realized his predicament was dangerous, and he paused long enough to consider his responsibilities, his wife and his children. He was honest with himself and honest with his God. And then we talked about how this can apply to us, these stories, how our wins, our mental states can precede our wins or our relapses. For the wins, we talked about pausing to listen to our higher power, taking healthy actions, thinking of others. And in our relapses, we talked about justifying things. Oh, I'll do it on Monday. Or being upset, letting those negative feelings take over, and feeling lonely, and being apart from our higher power and just ignoring those voices or those promptings from our HP. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. So I have to share this. I love this. She comes up to me. I have to tell. She goes, I've never spoken in public before. I'm really, really scared what the group wants me to do. Don't you think she has a beautiful voice? Didn't she do a great job? Woo-hoo! That was great. Thank you. Okay, that was phenomenal. Okay, next, come on up. Okay, great.
Back up again. Okay. I got voted.
Okay, our group decided that Jim was...
What's your name?
Oh, I'm Rhonda. I'm a compulsive eater, and I haven't changed in 5 minutes.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Yes, there was anger, there was resentment, there was fear. There was disappointment, shame, guilt, total demoralization. Total insanity. He had a mental twist which he ignored again and again and again. He ignored God's voice. I love that. He was in, let's see here. He ignored God's voice. That was it. Bill W. He was in financial ruin. He was fearful. He was lonely. He felt guilt and shame. But he realized or became aware of his HP. He had a mental twist, and he was in danger. But what pulled him out was his thoughts of others. And what made him get out of it was an outreach call. He picked up the 1,000-pound phone! Yes. When we're winning, we're trusting our higher power. We have a conscious sanity. We're trusting our own inner voices, which is connected to our higher power. And the old ladies in the attic have shut up. It's the them. The them have shut up.
Yeah.
In relapse, we have a mental twist. We have disturbances with people, places, and things. We are disconnected from our higher power. We are selfish. We are self-centered, and we are isolated with our food.
Yep.
There you go. Okay.
Thank you. Next.
Well,
I want to say all those things. I'm Karen, and I'm a composable reader.
Hey, Karen.
And we decided that Jim started out being irritated because he had a resentment. His ego was he had a lot of ego that was bruised and hurt pride. He was afraid. He felt hungry. He was restless. He had money fears. He possibly wanted to get out in the country to escape his situation, and he was self-reliant. Bill was bitterly discouraged. He also had money fears. He was lonely. He also had a bruised ego and hurt pride. He was, in addition, he was tired, restless, and tempted to escape. He was gripped by fear. And the difference was that he was honest with himself, and he was willing to do what it takes, and he was open to doing something completely different than calling somebody that he never, you know, a stranger. Our mental states have preceded this. For us, we came up with relapses are preceded by fear, by ego, I can do this, that self-reliance, wanting to be part of, resentful, and discouraged. And the win, mental states that precede our wins are honesty, first of all, with self and others, being willing. Altruistic, wanting to help others, self-love, self-care, and feeling included and being open.
Great. Thank you very much. Who's next?
I'm Jen from Bakersfield, compulsive overeater.
Hey, Jen.
What everybody else said was fantastic. Margaret had a great discussion. I just really enjoyed it immensely. Maybe some of the things that are a little bit different, we noticed that we felt like Jim was a little bit cocky, referring to the bosses as brass, and this is just an experiment, you know, that he was a little bit in his own ego, very self-absorbed kind of thing, and that Bill had very similar situation, very down and out, very shaky, but he seemed to be a little bit more honest and in touch with his feelings. And we noticed very early in Bill's story, he knew he needed to talk to someone, but he didn't know who. Another difference between Jim and Bill is Jim went in for that sandwich, even though it was probably not a good day to go to a bar for a sandwich. Just like there are some days not good for us and for me to go into the ice cream shop. You know, other days it would be okay, but there are some days you're like, this ain't a good day to go in. So he didn't stop himself. Whereas Bill saw and thought, but stopped himself before he went in and sat down. So we noticed that as kind of an important difference between the two. We saw their paths being very similar. You know, they were both disturbed, and they were both in very dangerous predicaments. However, the choices that they made were different, and we saw Jim as kind of having a me program, and Bill having a we program. And that they were probably both in the process of relapse already, but it was just one thought away and one action away from doing something different.
Good one. Good. That's really good. One thought away from relapse. Isn't that something? Excellent. Good. Okay. Remember that. One thought away from relapse. That's literally like playing Russian roulette. Click, click, click. Okay.
I'm Cheryl, and I am a compulsive overeater.
Hey, Cheryl.
Hey, guys. So, Jim was in denial. He did have resentment. He was irritated with his work situation. He was not on guard, so his defenses were down, and suddenly he was blindsided. Suddenly he had the thought. And then he went into his justifications that if he could drink on a full stomach and with milk, it would be fine, and he continued to justify himself. Bill was... He was also lonely and physically weak, and he felt his fear, but he was willing to choose. And he paused long enough to experience a healthy fear and he turned. He walked away and chose God. We talked about our wins. For our wins, we pause. We pause. We took action. We had faith. We reached out. We replaced our thoughts. We thought of the consequences. We paused to feel what we were feeling. And we prayed. Prayer for the win. Our relapses happen when we're on autopilot. Our defenses are down. We're in denial. We're justifying. We're in fear. We're in rebellion. Self-will. And impulsive.
Excellent. Y'all did a wonderful job. Is there one more group?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Two more. Oh, good. Great. Come on up.
Ours is pretty brief. I'm Marilyn, compulsive overeater.
Hey, Marilyn.
We talked about pretty much everything everybody else already said, but these are from our notes. Jim was irritated because of his previous fight at work, hungry, isolated. He put himself in a place of temptation. He didn't listen to his intuition, knowing that it was a place of temptation. He was behaved arrogantly, thinking he could be able to be in control in a tempting situation, and obviously that didn't work out too well. And he did not choose to utilize any of the tools that maybe he had been exposed to in AA, and he didn't, go to his higher power at all, either. With Bill, despite experiencing very similar feelings that Jim felt as far as the emotions of isolation and temptation and fear, he was honest with himself. He thought the situation over thoroughly and rationally, and he recognized his insanity or possible insanity and what was really important in his life. And he remembered constructive choices and its higher power.
We didn't get to the
mental states of relapse and wins, but I think we would all agree that relapse, we forget all the tools that we learn in OA, and we also forget about communing with our higher power. With wins, we stay true to ourselves, and we do remember our higher power.
Great, thank you. Thank you.
I'm Jim, a compulsive overeater.
Hey, Jim.
I'm so impressed with everything that's been said so far, and basically just saying it a little bit differently. With Jim, he was mentally felt that he could possibly sell a car to someone in a bar. I have never bought a car in a bar.
That's pretty good, right?
So therefore, he was very self-centered, and he manipulated his own mind to justify himself for being in that bar. And then, basically, when he couldn't sell a car, because obviously there's nobody in a bar that's going to buy a car, he just felt he lost his mental, the reason why he was there, and shoot, just went from there. And Bill, he basically eyeballed the bar and then left. He listened to his higher power. And he called wanting to do service. Therefore, his other center kept calling people, trying to stay and doing some action. Mental states that precede our wins and relapses, obviously not in alignment with our higher power. We don't think through, not reaching out, and we don't really even think about service when we get to that point. That's all we have.
Great. Thank you very much.
Heather. Jim is irritated, in denial about his feelings, and in denial about handling the first drink. We felt he was disconnected from himself, especially when he just vaguely sensed that this might not be a good idea. He thought this time could be different, and he was connected with his ego, and also he put himself in a dangerous situation. As others have mentioned, he went into the bar, unlike Bill. Bill sensed he was fragile and that the situation was dangerous, and he knew that he couldn't drink, and he had a fear of the first drink.
He knew he was powerless, and he took spiritual action. And he didn't go into the bar. Big difference. Mental states that precede relapses. Our main one was just thinking. I think in trouble. Other mental states, self-serving, self-pity, thinking you don't need the tools, and thinking no one can help you. Wins are preceded by action to interfere with our thoughts, asking for help, recognition of our powerlessness, going to meetings, willingness, and a general mental state of spirituality.
Great, thank you.
My name is Tiffany. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hey, Tiffany.
So Jim, the bar was his comfort zone. He was rationalizing that was the place he should be. He had a lot of ego going on. He was jealous, deflated, angry with his boss, didn't have tools, didn't know he had options, didn't have a phone booth. Bill saw that he was in a dangerous predicament, so he had fear. He was lonely and had anticipation of being lonelier. He was also dismal and broke, but he knew he had a tool. He was not in denial. His eyes were open, and he felt a responsibility to his community and others, a connection to his higher power, and he knew he couldn't do it alone. With regard to us, we talked about relapses being preceded by fear. Fear of being uncomfortable, hungry, angry, lonely, tired, of course. And with our wins, that occurs when we know and utilize the tools, use the support of our community, and have a plan in place before we get there, wherever there is.
Great. Thank you very, very much. We have one more.
We never got to us. We were pretty involved with Bill and Jim.
I hope I do this okay. My notes are sort of all over the place. We didn't say anything that everybody. Hi, I'm Camille, a recovering compulsive overeater.
Hey, Camille.
We didn't say anything that we haven't already heard.
You know what? I just have to say this. She's up here with her iPad. She prefaces, well, I hope I get it right. Hers is typed.
Yeah, I know, but it's all over
beautiful.
The place.
Okay, so let's see.
I didn't have time to edit.
Wouldn't Jim and Bill be impressed? She didn't edit it. She didn't spell check. Okay.
So Jim was mindless, irritated, not conscious, vague, numb, and in denial. Listen, the cat woke up that morning. He was going to drink the second he put his feet on that ground, is my take on him. And he was just looking for it, and he got it. And Bill is mindful, aware of his feelings, verbalizing and putting it out there, what's going on within him. He's on the alert. He knows he's not in a good place. He knows he's in a strange environment. He knows he's financially broken. He knew he needed to pick up something to connect with somebody to put it out there. He keyed into his feelings. He knew he was in a dangerous position. He felt lonely. And the key is fear gripped him, and he didn't go with his fear, but he went into picking up a tool. So he shivers and turns away and goes to that church directory. So he was all about responsibility, and we didn't get into us because we were pretty.
He did a great job. You guys, you all did a great job. You all did a phenomenal job. Great, thank you. You know, you can't do this right, you can't do it wrong. You just have to do it. That's like you can't do the 12 steps right, you can't do them wrong. You just have to do it, because in doing it, it's going to change you. You know, there's no, done beats perfect any day of the week. So, does anybody have a personal story that you can share with us that you came up against some feelings like irritated or bitterly disappointed, and you either won or you lost with it? So let's think about that. Okay, here's one here.
I'm Liz, compulsive overeater.
Hey, Liz.
This wasn't too long ago. I went to my daughter's house. I went to my granddaughter's graduation. And my relationship with my daughter has been very shaky ever since I got sober.
Sober or abstinent?
Sober.
Sober, okay.
But this has to do with that.
Sure. Okay.
It's been progressively getting worse and worse. Well, a situation happened at my granddaughter's graduation, which was beyond irritating. I was bitterly disappointed. I was angry. I was frustrated. I didn't know of any tools to pull out.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to drive home, 2.5 hour drive home, and I hadn't had dinner. So I was hungry, angry, lonely, tired. And I started thinking, where can I get something to eat on the way home? Well, Sacramento Valley has lots of places to go to eat. Off of my list of places to eat for my food plan are drive-thrus and fast food restaurants. So that eliminated all of those. And then I thought, you know, I could go to some place like Sizzler or Applebee's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something that's pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
Have a good meal, make myself feel better. And of course, they also serve alcohol. My higher power talked me out of doing that. Said, no, you can munch on these peanuts you got in the seat next to you.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just drive straight home. And then take care of your food when you get home. Because my home is clean. My home is clean with food. And thank God I listened and I drove straight home, even though it meant I didn't have my dinner till 10 o'clock at night, which was way late for me. And it also got me into action to deal with the serious issues with my daughter.
Mm-hmm. And so do you see how she came up against choice? She came up across. Thank you so much for sharing that story. And we're all going to come up against that, okay? And sometimes you're going to have to white-knuckle it, and you're going to have to fight with everything you've got. And I want to tell you my Taco Bell story, okay? And so one day, I think I had been married, oh, maybe 6 months. Gosh, let's see. My dad had died 6 months after I got married, so I just... It was a really hard time. We were married 6 months. My dad had died. Something had happened. It was just really a hard time. Just really hard time. And so I had gone to a meeting, and I'm in the meeting, I can have my dinner. I can go to Taco Bell. It's legal. Okay. So I wouldn't break my abstinence. Even though it would be a weight-gaining meal, it would be inappropriate. It would not be sober eating. It would be inappropriate. Okay? So I'm in the meeting, and there's probably someone here, or two or three, who's thinking about the food that they're going to get on the way home. Is anybody doing that? Okay? Anybody else? Okay? Anybody else? Okay, it's really important. If you're a little weird about it, we need to address that so that you can get home safe, so that we can kind of buddy up you, and you bookend it, and you get the win. Because if you let those thoughts go unchecked, then you don't know. Like, it's Russian roulette. Like, that just might be one stop, but it might be, you might not wake up for 50 pounds. Remember, there is a bottom below the bottom, you know. Do you realize what courage it took those five people to raise those hands? And there's somebody else in here that didn't raise their hand. So if you saw those people raise their hands, you have a moral obligation to go up to each one of them and help them bookend that trip. I don't care if you have to talk to them all the way home and all through the night to get them to get abstinent all through that day. Do you understand that?
Yes.
I've been on the phone with people before, and I go, "Walk? Are you walking to the sink? Mm-hmm. Turning the garbage disposal? Mm-hmm. Doing it. I mean, sometimes we need that kind of help. You get it? So you have to help others. It is 50% of the program. Okay? And I'm really serious about it. Did you see those people that raised their hands? Did you? Could you please raise your hand again if you're thinking about binging on the way home? Keep them up. Just if you're thinking about it, you got a thought, just because it's really important that you link up. If we could have done it ourselves, we would have. All right? Don't do what I did. Okay, so here's my Taco Bell story. So I'm in a meeting, okay? And I, let's see. I look like this. No. I'm 15 pounds heavier than this, okay? And so let's see, I'm in my meeting, and I am thinking about, I'm going to talk about. And I got to the meeting late. Ding, 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 ding. That's an indicator. Ding, 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 ding. Okay, so if you're going late to a meeting, ding, 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 ding. Okay, don't let your sponsees go late to a meeting. Don't you go late to a meeting. It's not allowed. Don't do it. Get to a meeting early. Watch what, just, what if the alcoholics, whatever the AA people are doing, go to their meetings, watch what they do, bring it back here, and teach us how to do it. Okay? I went to a lot of AA meetings, and I brought a lot of the recovery here because I like how they do it. And I'd go to AA, and they'd say, "Oh, hi, welcome, hi, what's your name?" I go, "Sherry." And they go, "Oh, how long have you been in AA?" I go, "I'm not an alcoholic." And they go, well, stick around. I go, "I'm just a fat chick." I go, "Really? I'm in another program." They go, "No, you keep coming back. Keep coming." I go, "I can order 6 drinks. I don't like that one. Give me one." I am a thoroughbred. I am an eater. I am not an alcoholic. I'm not a drug addict. It's like I'm a thoroughbred. So anyhow, I'm in my OA meeting, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to have this. I'm going to have that. Blah blah blah. Like I said, I came late to the meeting. So anyhow, we're at the end of the meeting, and so we're standing in a circle, and I hear, and so we do the, "Keep coming back, it works if you work it," right? And I, boom, I beeline and go out the, you know, which is another ding, 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 ding. You know, if you don't stay around and, you know, say, thank the speaker, right? In AA, nobody goes chit-chatting to anybody else. They go beeline to the speaker. They've been taught, go say hi and thank the speaker. Then they go talk to the newcomer, exchange phone numbers. Then they go talk to their friends. Anybody in AA here? Do I have it right or wrong? True, right? True. Okay, so I get in the car, and this girl, she goes on, I'm like this, and she goes on the outside window on the passenger side, and she goes, and I look over, and I go, "Hi!" Big smile, "Hi!" And she goes like this. That shows you how long ago it was. I cranked the window down, right? But I did have it. Like the window goes down, and she goes, "What's wrong?" And I'm like, "Oh God, of course she's an old timer, right?" And I had what, 4 years at the time or whatever, and I was like, "There's the feeling back of my head." Okay, whatever you ask for in prayer, God answers in physical form. I left the best part of the story out. I thought, okay, what can I do? I'm not going to, I don't know what to do. I'm going to go to Taco Bell. So I said, okay, fine, God, I'll do this. God, if you want me to go to Taco Bell, then let me go to Taco Bell. If you don't want me to go to Taco Bell, then don't let me go to Taco Bell. Place in me your will and give me the power and courage to carry it out. And that's the best I could do, a real, real snotty attitude like that. And lo and behold, boom, there's that chick, shows up. I'm telling you, that's the most magical prayer, that Sherry surrender prayer. And so there she is, and she goes, "What's wrong?" And it was a feeling in the back of my head. It's like, "Sherry, share it or wear it. Talk about it." And I go, "Get in." And of course, I didn't say it like that. And so I go, "Get in." You know, she goes, "What's wrong?" She goes, "You're never late, and you're never leaving. What's wrong?" I don't know what the heck the problem was. Do you think I went to Taco Bell?
No.
I didn't go to Taco Bell. Okay. So anyhow, so that I just that surrender prayer has helped me so many times, and I think I just said it wrong because I'm tired. So once again, it's God. If you want me to go to Taco Bell, then let me go to Taco Bell. If you don't want me to go to Taco Bell, then don't let me go to Taco Bell. But place in me your will and give me the power and courage to carry it out. So we're all going to come up against those stories. Did anybody else have, does anybody else have a story like that where they won or they lost? Come on up.
My name is Tiffany, I'm a compulsive reader.
Hey, Tiffany.
In the last 6 months, I've been doing a little bit of drinking wine in the evening. Not because I particularly enjoy wine, but it makes it a lot easier to eat for me, or to relax, or whatever it is, you know, that wanting to be comfortable. And so a week ago, I got a call during the day. This was the setup. I got a call during the day, and a friend of mine called me and offered me a job, which, had I said, yes, I'll take it, it would have been all about, like, ego and look at me and, oh, my gosh, I have this important position. And as soon as she said it, I was like, look, I don't want to do this. But, oh, my gosh, if I had that job, da-da-da-da. So, like, the next day, it's her birthday, and everybody's going to a happy hour. She goes, oh, my God, I still hope you'll come. So we meet everybody who works in the office and all this kind of stuff. And so I said, oh, okay, yes, I'll come. So I know, I'm walking in, right? And so I called my sponsor beforehand, and I said that I wasn't going to drink anything. And if I did get something to drink, I'd do the fake gin and tonic where you get the sparkly water with the lime on the top. Works like a charm. Anyway, so I got there, and as I walked into the restaurant, I thought they were just going for drinks. I walk in. They've ordered every single appetizer off of the menu. They have all just arrived, so they're hot. And they hand me a plate. And then, like, moments later, they pull out something from Freeport Bakery in Sacramento, if you know. A destination event for me. And so as I'm standing there looking at all of this, Christian walks across the room. And so he didn't even know. He didn't even see me.
Tell us who Christian is, because we're recording.
The shuttle drivers. I don't know if he's here. Anyway, I told him the story this weekend, because I'd never had that happen in a restaurant. I'd had it happen in a
So you're saying that Christian is someone in OA
who's
that you know who's here this weekend.
Yeah.
So because we're recording, and someone's not going to know who Christian is.
Yeah.
So that's
so
what
anyway,
I'm saying.
A fellow OA-er walks across the restaurant, and I see him go across, and I'm like, I'll have water. So anyway.
Great. Excellent. Okay. So, see, everybody has a choice. Everybody has a choice. So the reason I wanted to really talk about irritated versus bitterly disappointed is that we minimize irritated. Irritated comes along. Oh, thank you. Two microphones. Jeez. One in my hip, one in my waist, one in my hand, one in my ear. Jeez. Okay. So we minimize when we're irritated. Because that's where it began, right? Whether it was in your family, or however it began, it doesn't matter who, it just matters how we internalized it. We learn to cancel ourselves out. Push past. Push. Put some elbow grease into it. Try harder. Do this. Do that. Whatever it is, we learn to disassociate, to disconnect, not pay attention. We do not pay attention to any of our feelings. Does that make sense? Okay, so here's another little story of mine. These people are water skiing out here today. The sound of that boat is like, ah, hit it, Dad! I want to ski. I love the smell of the gasoline, the boat. I was like, oh, I love it. Okay, so my best family times was when we would take and we would water ski. Okay, that was our best time because the rest of it was hell. And anyhow, I was kind of like, my brother was a juvenile delinquent. He was made a ward of the court at 12 years old. I mean, he was dropping acid, stealing cars. I mean, it was hell. So anyhow, I was kind of like the boy of the family. So I'm like, even though I look like, you know, Miss Glamour Glitter, I'm really Mrs. Fix-It. You know, it's like, you need anything fixed in the house? It's like Sherry does it. But I love looking like I'm like Miss Glam, right? But it's like I can fix anything. And people think like, you know, I'm the one who's talking to the plumber. I'm the one who's negotiating deals, doing all this stuff. And they're like, where's your husband? Are you married? You know, and it's like, ain't none of your business, baby. Working a deal here. So anyhow, so here we are, you know, and when you water ski, you know, you put your boat in the water, and so you set up your beach, you know, you get across and you can go set up your beach. And so I've got the, pulling up to shore, and I've got and I tie it off to a tree. So I walk up to the tree, and I'm reaching down, and I hear this, and I jump back, rattler, like that. My mom says, and I go, rattler, and my mom says, oh, Sherry, stop being so dramatic. Tie it off. What'd you think I did? Reach down, there's a snake right there, rattler. I tried to tie it off, and I jump back. My instinct is stronger than my mind. And she goes, Sherry, come on. Reach down again. This guy comes running over with a gun. He shoots the snake. He's so proud of himself. He holds up the snake. He's showing it to his friends, right? And he's standing there, and he goes, you can have the rattler. Can I have the snake? I want to have it for dinner. And I'm just standing there going, you know? So anyhow, so intense training negates instinct. As a little girl with incest, I was telling my mom, this is what he's doing to me. This is what he's doing to me. This is what he's doing to me. And she said, nice girls don't say that. Nice girls don't say that. Nice girls don't say that. I mean, I thought I was going crazy. Okay? And I would have like these out-of-body experiences. I couldn't handle it. And so I had learned, no matter if I saw blue skies, yellow sun, she could say, no, it's raspberry-colored skies and gold stars. So when the rattlesnake was there, it didn't matter, because what she said, her truth mattered, because mine was non-existent. So I had learned a long time ago to cancel my feelings out. So do you think that I knew anything about paying attention to irritated, frustrated? None of it. None of it. That's how I got to be 260 pounds. Okay? There are people out there that literally go, I'm full. I go, full of what? Okay? My husband, he orders a dessert, and I go, you don't like it? He goes, it's too rich. I go, I don't see any money there. I mean, I don't get it. Okay? But intense training negates instinct. So I want you to pay attention this week to little tiny feelings. If you push past the little tiny feeling, if you don't stop when there's a rock in your shoe, what's going to happen? You're going to lose your foot. You must stop. You have a God-given right that says there's a rock in your shoe. None of you have ever let the rock in your shoe create a blister, have you? None of you. You are obedient to that instinct. You stop, you take that rock out, and you do something about it. You take care of it right then and there. If we walked, were on a walk, and we saw a deer, and we were all, and I go, look, there's a deer. And if we stepped forward and the deer's ear cocked back like that, and we stepped forward and the twig went crunch, the deer wouldn't look around. It would just boom, it would just leap off and be gone. Okay? So here I am in New Orleans. I have this little Porsche. My goal at 21 years old was to buy a Porsche. I didn't make it. I bought it at 23. So anyhow, I mean, that's pretty cool for a kid at 23 to have a Porsche, right? And I have no education. So I was very proud of myself. So here I have this Porsche. Now I've moved to New Orleans, and I have a business. And so my car breaks down. And in New Orleans, it's very checkerboard. It's very spotty. It's like you have beautiful mansions, and then you've got the projects, and it's like you can be in a beautiful area, and then two blocks over, you're in the projects. So the car breaks down, and I have this feeling that says, take the screwdriver out of the glove box and leave your purse in the car. And I say, no, it'll look like I'm scared. So I decide to take my purse, forget the screwdriver, and I walk, okay, and I'm dressed in a business suit, high heels, nylons, the whole bit, and I'm walking across, right, and I get jumped by six guys. Okay? Now what does Sherry do? The girl with a pizza in one hand and a whip in the other. What do you think I do? I'm running after him. You son of a gun. I go chasing him right down into the projects. I get a feeling on the back of my neck that says, Sherry, if you go one step farther, you ain't coming out of there. So I stopped. And backed off. I was like, okay. But I like to win. So I found some kids because I knew they knew that neighborhood, and I go, look, I'll give you $50 if you get my purse, you get everything that's in it, you can keep all the money, but you need to do it, and you need to do it in 20 minutes. I got my purse back, got everything back. I know how to work the streets. Okay, so remember, if it looks right and it feels wrong, you must be obedient and not do it, no matter what it is. Write it down. If it looks right and it feels wrong, you must be obedient to it. The flip side of that also is, if it looks wrong and it feels right, you must be obedient to that. If it looks wrong and it feels right, you must be obedient to that. Wait a minute. Let me get the first one down. Do you have the first one? Okay, so what's the first one?
If it looks right and it feels wrong, you must be obedient to that.
And do not do it. If it feels wrong, feelings. See, I can't sing, right? Feelings. If it feels wrong, no matter how much you've been trained to reach down to the snake, don't do it. Because your gut's saying don't do it, but you've been taught to do it, don't do it. Right? It looks right, feels wrong. It looks right to obey my mommy. Mommy says, jump down and do that, right? It felt wrong. I kept doing it. It was wrong. It looked right, felt wrong. I'm in New Orleans. My car breaks down. I get a feeling that says, take the screwdriver, leave the purse. I override it, the instinct in me, because it looked wrong, but it felt right. But I said, no, I'm not going to do that. So I didn't do it. So if it looks right and feels wrong, don't do it. If it feels wrong, do not do it. If it feels wrong, do not do it. If it feels wrong, do not do it. Okay? If it looks wrong and feels right, do it. If it looks wrong and feels right, do it. If it looks wrong and feels right, do it. If it looks wrong and feels right, do it. If it looks wrong and feels right, do it. Hope I just cut a new groove in your head. Okay? Because it's going to be so uncomfortable when it looks wrong, but it feels right, but you'll change your life. Yes? Microphone girl.
I have a caveat about that, or I'm actually asking a question about it, really, which is that I've spent a lot of years in Al-Anon, and I know that a lot of times something feels wrong because it so goes against the grain as an Al-Anon to say no to somebody. So it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel good. But yet it's still the right thing for me to do. So how do you square with that?
Give me an actual scenario.
My daughter asks me for, what's that one? Come on, my Al-Anon friends. Anybody?
Someone asked me for money. Somebody, if a family member asks you to come over for a holiday and you really don't want to go.
Look at me. Tell me a story that actually happened to you.
My ex-husband, you know, called me and wanted me to go with him and my daughter someplace. And my instincts were, you know, that's really not a good plan. But my Al-Anon stuff was like, it doesn't feel right to say no to him. It doesn't feel right.
Let's not say Al-Anon stuff. Let's okay. Drop the big broad brushstroke. Okay. Pick up the little brush and say exactly what the words are. Okay, so my former husband invites me to go out with him and my daughter to dinner, and it looked right and it felt wrong. Is that what you said?
It felt wrong to say no.
It felt wrong.
It didn't feel good.
Okay.
I knew he was going to be upset and my daughter was going to be
okay.
upset.
Okay. It looked right. It looked right and it felt wrong to go.
Well, actually, yes.
Yes. Okay. It looked right. It looks right to go out with my daughter's father. It looks right to go and do that, to be a cohesive family unit and support and to blah, 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 right?
But it feels wrong.
And it feels wrong. Okay? So she should be obedient to that. Okay? And now she comes up against herself that says, oh man, what do I do? And if you cancel that part of yourself out that says, ah, and you go ahead and do it, and so did you go or not go?
That time I went, and the next time it felt so bad, I was like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that again.
Okay, so she went against herself, okay? So just what I said proved that point. I had to step back a little bit because I think my microphone's kind of weird. Am I too loud over there? Something, I feel echoey. Okay, so, but do you see how, when you overrode that feeling, like I did in New Orleans, it didn't turn out good, did it?
No.
See, your higher power gave you that instinct, like that rock in your shoe, and you said, forget it, I'm going to do it, and you literally got jumped, just like me. Okay? So the next time it came around, you were obedient to it. So remember, no matter how much them, T-H-E-M, thoughts, having emotional mantras, that you're taught to, you know, we're going to make this nice, cohesive, you know, co-parenting thing with our daughter, and I should go to dinner, and yaddy, 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 it didn't work out. Do you think the daughter knew it didn't work out that night?
Yeah.
Okay? Do you think God placed on her heart the ability to stop that disaster and to be able to transmit true love to her daughter and to make right whatever was wrong with that marriage had she been obedient? Right? Okay, so it's important that when God gives that to you from now on, no matter how hard it is, that you muscle through it and you do what's right. Because when you don't, you're turning your back on your higher power. Because that's how our egos and our addictions cancel God out. And we render God unhearable. And that's why we say, what happened to the pink cloud? Where's God? But never once did God move. It was always me. Right? Okay. So we're going to move on to our next exercise, but I hope that made some sense to you. I want to read one little thing. Was there another question? Did I see real quick? Okay. I want to just say this to you, because choice is very important. Choice is such a big responsibility. You know, when we were children, you know, if you're an alcoholic, you know, pretty much alcoholics are outwardly aggressive and angry. Have you noticed that? Okay? Compulsive overeaters are outwardly nice and friendly. Okay? How you doing? Oh, just fine. Okay, I don't know why that is. Okay, but we internalize everything. We don't let anybody in. But an alcoholic, rah! Okay, the drug addict is kind of a combo. I know what that's about. Okay, it's kind of like, you know, the anorexic is on this scale, the compulsive overeater is on this far end of the scale, and the bulimic's right in the middle. You know, I don't know what that's all about. But anyhow, choice is a big responsibility. And so it was trained out of us, because the more malleable we were, the better they liked us. Stop knitting. Stop knitting. Your life is about to change. You ask that very, very important question. Put that down.
Okay.
Be present in your life. You deserve this.
Okay.
You deserve this. You're going to get this.
All right.
Really good things are really going to happen to you.
Okay.
And it's going to be really, really uncomfortable. And at times, you are going to have to do liar, liar, pants on fire. And I call that baby steps. And so I work with people, and I go, and she goes, I know it's not right for me to go, but I don't know how to get out of it. I go, you have my permission to be liar, liar, pants on fire until you grow up and learn how to say it like a lady. She goes, really? I go, yeah, because you come first. You and your relationship to God comes first. She goes, really? I go, yeah. So in the early days, if you handed me a plate of food and you said, you said, sure, I made these cookies. You're at the office. And I made these cookies for you. I made these cookies, and you've got to have one. And I have, this is what I call embrace with grace, release with peace. And I take the cookie like this and I go, oh, that looks so beautiful. Oh my gosh, I'm going to take this one, and I'm going to take this one. And I'm going to save this for later, because my stomach is so upset and I really want to enjoy that. Let's see, come with me, let me wrap this up, okay? Okay, do you mind if I take two? So I make a big deal out of it, okay? Do you see that? Embrace with grace, release with peace. Liar, liar, pants on fire. But I kept my pants on, right? Like pants. Woohoo! Okay? That's called liar, liar, pants on fire. Then I go to my husband and I go, honey, brought you some brownies, brought you some cookies. And then I walk around in my nice pants. All right? So if you have to be liar, liar, pants on fire, so what? So what? You do it until you grow up. Okay, here's another little trick. This is kind of running into our safe from relapse with recovery quotient, so I'm just going to kind of blend this all in. Here's another one. So just pretend we're on the recovery quotient. I'll pass out those forms in a second. Here's another one. So here I am. I can't stand when somebody goes, I don't need that. I can't stand. And then it makes everybody on the table uncomfortable, right? You sit down at the table, and then somebody goes, I used to go, no dessert. And then everybody says what? God, don't you hate that? God, I hated that. So then that puts a focus on me, right? I can't stand that. So now they put the dessert right in front of me, right? And so I take up my little fork, and nobody's ever caught me. Liar, liar, pants on fire. I just love this, okay? And I go like this with my, here's the dessert. Only do this. People on recording, you can only do this if you're at a certain level in your recovery. Not newbies are not allowed to do this. You're going to have to suffer the pain of tank-a-bang. Okay, so I take my fork. I learned this from an alcoholic. I take my fork and I mush into it like that. And I talk and I put my fork down. And then I pick it up and I mush around like that again. Nobody has ever said, why aren't you eating it? They go, oh, this is so good. I go, I'm going to regret this tomorrow. Regret what? What? Maybe I stayed up too late. They don't know. Liar, liar, pants on. Who cares? My recovery comes first. My relationship with God comes first. And if I have to be liar, liar, pants on, so what? Okay? So you're allowed to do that until you grow more fully into yourself. Does that make sense? So an alcoholic told me that she said that when they pour wine at the table, and she couldn't stand it when she'd say, none for me, because they'd do the, come on, have wine. Because every you know, it's not like get drunk and tie one on. It's just everybody want, you know, participate. So she goes, I'd twirl the stem of the glass. And she goes, I'd lift it out and move it around. She goes, and nobody knew it, didn't know I was drinking. What a brilliant idea. So, anyhow, just, we actually have started on the recovery quotient, but I want to read this to you. The function of the soul, where your truth lies, is to indicate its desire, not impose it. The function of the soul, where your truth lies, is to indicate its desire, not impose it. The function of the mind is to choose from its choices. The function of the body is to act out that choice. When body, mind, and soul create together, then we have true healing. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Right? So it's really, really important. And I just want to come here and just nail you. What's your name?
I think we've done enough of that.
You are Scarlett. You are going to be in my thoughts all year long. I'm going to be thinking about you so much. You don't even have to talk. Scarlett, you know what? When I met my husband, it looked so wrong, and it felt so right, and I was so scared. And I was looked at God and I said, really? 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 And so I said, and I had this feeling, and it was like, you know what, Sherry, if you pass on him, you're going to regret it the rest of your life. And I was like, how am I going to turn away from that? This guy's broke. He smokes cigarettes. He's got a dent in his car. He's got dumb clothes. He's at the lowest part in his life. But the feeling was, if I passed on it, I'd regret it the rest of my life. So I thought, you know what? If worse comes to worse, I know how to make money. I know how to this, I know how to that. You know what? I'll do 30 days. And when somebody stands up at a meeting and takes a 30-day chip, you know what? I'll take it for staying with him. That's how I walked through it, one day at a time. And then my girlfriend, she said, because my friends thought I was nuts, right? Because they're used to seeing me like, right? And right? And she goes, Sherry, you'll make your millions together. And I'm like, she's telling me that? And God, you're doing this, and it feels right, and it looks wrong. But man, I loved him from the inside out, and I was living loved. And it just felt so right. And I went with it. And it's a frickin' fairy tale. Hey, check this out. And this is not to brag, okay? Check this out. I got this on my 20th wedding anniversary. Woohoo! Okay? Check this out, okay? So, anyhow, on the inside of this, it says our wedding date, and then it says Tim and Sherry, and then it says the perfect pair, right? P-A-I-R, because it's a pear-shaped diamond. And on the outside, they had to make it larger when I picked it up because it was engraved, and it says, and they lived happily ever after. So I have to go back and get it because they had to add a couple more diamonds to make the size. But anyhow, so I'm telling you, please be obedient to those instincts. You'll never, ever, ever regret it. You'll never regret it. So, okay, let's do the recovery quotient. Let's go ahead and pass this out. Need some help passing these out. Okay. Good, good, good. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Just give one to me. Good, good, good. Okay. Sure. Okay, does every, okay, we're just still passing those out. So here's a little pop quiz. Relapse happens in the
mind.
Excellent. Okay? Relapse is a not Anna? Excellent. Okay? Just remember, if you're starting to think food thoughts, shut it down. When it's on the plate, it's way too late. Okay? This may work for alcoholics. You'll hear this in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. Halt. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. In my experience, it's way too late. If I'm hungry, too late, lost my power of choice. Lonely, lost my power of choice. Tired, no choice left. Okay? Hungry, angry, lonely, tired, forget about it. It's very important, just like with Jim, had Jim paid attention to his feeling of irritation, he would have stayed sober. But he pushed past. Okay? Remember, it's the small, tiny, tiny, tiny little feelings. It's very, very important. All right? So little feelings. So the reason I came up with the recovery quotient is that I wanted to remember, because I was living like this really easy and effortlessly. And I thought, you know what? I had heard about a lot of people who do not have long-term abstinence, i.e. who have not obtained and maintained a healthy body weight. Because I don't care if somebody is abstinent for 50 years or 30 years or 10 years, and if they're not at a healthy body weight, that doesn't mean anything to me. Okay? This is not Emotions Anonymous. This is Overeaters Anonymous. We're here to be sober with food. That's my feeling. It's Overeaters Anonymous. So, I thought, you know, I've seen so many alcoholics go out after 25, 30 years. I've seen people in OA go out after 4 years, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, 20 years. I've seen them go out on big issues, small issues, medium issues. And I thought, boy, I don't want that to happen to me. I don't know how the heck that happens, but I better figure out how I got home. I didn't want to be Hansel and Gretel because, you know, Hansel and Gretel, what would they do? Breadcrumbs, right? They drop the breadcrumbs along the way, right? And there goes Sherry eating them alive, you know, ruined Hansel and Gretel. They couldn't find their way home. So, you know, it was really, really important for me to remember. And here's the definition of relapse: to fall or backslide into a former state. The reappearance of the original symptoms. Relapse is a process, not an event. Relapse is simply the reversal of the recovery process. Don't think that compulsive overeating is a cold. It is a full-blown disease that kills thousands and destroys lives. When the symptoms go away, don't think that your addiction is gone. It's only in remission. It can come back with vengeance. There is a bottom below, the bottom you know. So, in the form that I've just passed out, you'll see that, and this is my recovery quotient, okay? So don't work my program, Don't work your program, work the program, all right? But this is what I did, okay? So on this chart, it lists everything that I did, and it has written across Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I'm reading this off for the people that are on the recording. So it says 12 steps. So it's like, make sure that I'm working the steps. 9 tools. And then I believe there should be 12 tools. So our 9 tools are plan of eating, sponsorship, meetings, telephone, writing, literature, action plan, anonymity, service. And then my 12 tools, I believe, should be exercise, crying, rest, and weighing in. Because crying to me, I believe that when you cry, every tear is an unshed pound. I think that crying is a way to really, you got to deal with the emotions. Right? Share it or wear it. That whole thing, paralysis of analysis. For me, I had to do a minimum of 5 to 7 meetings a week. Okay? It wasn't a thing that I had to do. It's what I had to do to keep my insane thoughts at bay. Kept my mind quiet. All right? And remember, I never hit a fat bottom. I hit a spiritual bottom. I couldn't stand living in my mind. Okay? I never hit a fat bottom. So even though I was 260 pounds, that was not the bottom for me. The bottom for me is that I couldn't live in my head. And like I had told you earlier in our retreat, I think that Oscar Wilde says it best. On his gravestone, it says, I drank to quiet my mind. Right? Call a sponsor. Be a sponsor. Talk to newcomers. Thank the speaker. Pitch. Lead. Speak at meetings. Workshops. Go to one. Give one. Prayer and meditation, timed. And you know, meditation was so elusive to me. It was like, how do you meditate? How do you get into that? You know, I'd do like a great meditation, like 45 minutes once a year. It was like, you know, and then it says, you know, in the AA 12 and 12, when prayer and meditation are combined, you know, phenomenal things happen, right? And miraculous things happen. So I asked this old timer, and I said, well, do you meditate? And she goes, oh, yeah. And I go, well, what do you do? And she goes, I set a timer. I go, what? She goes, I set a timer. I go, really? Yeah. And she goes, I do it for 8 minutes. And she goes, and sometimes I take a sip of coffee. She goes, but I do it every day. I go, well, I can do that. So that's how I started meditating. And I love it. Just set the timer. And for me, I don't get into any fancy position. I just sit in the chair. I put my feet up like this. Right? Coffee's there. And I'm just, right? I do my prayer. I do my reading. I do my writing. And I think that writing is the missing link between your head and your heart. Reading, writing, prayer, meditation. And having it timed. And sometimes when I get so bored with that, because we get bored with our routine of prayers and this and that and the other thing, then I'll do reverse meditation. So I'll meditate for 1 minute. And then that feels so good that I'll meditate for another minute. And oh, that feels so good that I'll meditate for another minute. So I kind of have to trick myself. That's called a reverse meditation. It's a good way to get into it. Service positions. Always have one. Why should you have a service position? Get yourself to a meeting, right? So important. Okay, tell someone what I'm keeping to myself. Weigh once a week. Why should you weigh once a week? Why do you think that's important? Accountability. Clarity. Okay? This is why I think weighing is important. If I feel like I don't want to weigh, that means I have to weigh. Okay? And I think that it's important when you don't want to weigh, that you need to weigh, that you need to learn to take your power back from the scale, and that you turn, that you learn where your higher power is and who your higher power is, and that scale is not your judge and your jury. It's nothing more than a checkbook. You look in your checkbook. We don't have checkbooks anymore. What do we call that? We look at our accounts, right, and we can see where we're at, okay? You don't go, I'm a good person, I'm a bad person. You look at it and you do something about it. Okay? I need to make more money. I need to spend less. I need to transfer money. I need to pay some bills or whatever. You just, you know, you do something about it. You look at the gas gauge in your car. You don't freak out. You don't think you're a good person or you're a bad person. You do something about it. You look at the trash in your house and you don't call yourself a good person or a bad person. You do something about it. So when you get on the scale, you're going to have feelings. You are always going to have feelings. You will have a feeling if you decide to eat at all. You will have a feeling if you decide to eat half. You will have a feeling if you decide to eat none of it. You cannot get away from feelings. So the sooner you learn to how to, I don't like to say feel your feelings, but let your feelings guide you back to your seat of power, you will be very empowered. As long as you let your feelings drive you away from your seat of power and run your life, you'll continue to turn to the food. So it's important to let your feelings guide you. And I think it's very, very important to weigh just to do the emotional work around that, as well as how am I doing. Listen to tapes. Well, this needs to be updated, right? So listen to podcasts, listen, you know. Grocery shop, that's important. Weigh and measure food if you need to. Some foods I weigh and measure. Some foods I don't need to. Write down food. Commit it to someone. Email if you need to. No padding meals. Does everyone know what padding your meals means?
No.
Okay. So padding your meals is, so let's say I'm making a salad. And I go, let's put a little more dressing on. And then I go, I'm going to put some croutons in. And then it's like, I'm going to put some nuts in. I'm going to put some raisins in. And then pretty soon, do you see, that's padding, okay? And then pretty soon, if I do that long enough, pretty soon, that's going to be a pile of everything, and there'll be no lettuce in it. Right? Right? I mean, we go to some restaurants, and they have a salad that probably has 2,000 calories in it, and it's like, that's a salad? It's like, really? Okay, so and padding your meals, it can start anywhere, but be aware of it. Does that make sense? Okay. Exercise 3 times a week. Don't listen. Now remember, this is my recovery quotient, so we're here to, you know, be able to identify yours. Don't listen to my disease, which I'm going to change this to, is my addiction, right? Because my addiction speaks to me in my own voice. All right? Insane ideas come into me in the form of common sense. Identify and plan for high-risk situations. This is very, very important. Plan what you will say, do, and have several backup strategies in case one doesn't work. And we're going to break out into groups and do some of this. We'll do real quick before evening is over. Statements to defend and reinforce my recovery when my disease starts talking. Identify the situations and places that are dangerous for your recovery. Movies, fast food, unplanned food, airplanes, vacations, restaurants. Plan ahead how you will cope with each of the above situations. 3 people I've committed to call when my food gets weird. Focus on the end result. Do not look at where your... I can't believe that's spelled like that. Where your feet are at. That's hysterical. To me, my recovery took, and to this day, takes a village. 12 steps, seminars, workshop therapists, self-help books, church, gym, nutritionists, TV shows, web forums, commercial weight loss programs, doctor, lawyers, Indian chiefs. Everyone's village is different. It takes a village. Who's in your village? So, if I don't want anyone ever to think that the recovery that you're hearing from me today is strictly from the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. It's not. This is the foundation of where my recovery began. But it says that we are supposed to, on page 56 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, we're supposed to step from bridge to shore and walk in constant companionship with the Creator of the universe. So, and we are to perfect and enlarge our spiritual life. Which I know it will continue to enlarge, but it will never be perfected. So we can either kind of do this as a group, or we can break out into groups and kind of plan for these high-risk situations. What would you guys want to do, break out or just do it as a group?
Group.
Okay, let's break out into groups. You want to do new groups or natural groups? Who wants to do all together? Oh, we're doing all together. Okay, that was really easy. Okay, here's the thing. Let's do this. Identify and plan for high-risk situations. So I want you to think about, right now, a high-risk situation. So I'm going to come up with one. And microphone girl, get ready to hustle. Okay, here's a high-risk situation for me. This happened the other day. Where was I? I was coming home late for something. I had a dental appointment. I'm running late, and it was right at my lunch hour because I was trying to do it where I wouldn't have to, you know, jockey my clients around. And so it made my lunch late, which is like not a good thing. The hungry, lonely, angry, tired thing. So it was like, oh man. And so it was like, I'm going to have this. And it was like, no, you're not. Yes, you are. Baby. And it's like, oh, God. And it was like, okay, Sherry. So this is what I do. So the first thought, where's my little head here? So here I have these old computer memory things, okay? So I have this old memory here that my first thought says, let's just, for simplicity's sake, since you know my Taco Bell story, let's say it says, Taco Bell! Like a kid will always say, what?
McDonald's.
Okay, that's their first thought. Candy, McDonald's, Disneyland. That's their first thought, okay? So in me, mine is Taco Bell, right? And then it's like, and then I have the power of choice. So then this head goes, no. And then I go, but I need something. And so it's like, Taco Bell! And it's really loud. Okay, because kids are loud and obnoxious and right, and they want it and they want it, and it's like no, okay, and it's like Sherry, what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? It's like blah, blah. And it's like a fight, right? Like you know how kids are like that, and so it's like Sherry, keep driving, you'll be home in like 10 or 12 minutes. Your lunch is ready, blah blah blah, and so I had to kind of keep on the straight and narrow, do exactly what. What Liz had done, and she just had like 10 minutes, 12 minutes to get him, but she had to kind of fight it in her mind. And I'm fighting it in my mind 25 years later. Got it? It's not going to go away. You will peacefully coexist with this. Okay? It's just like, does anybody believe my hair is really blonde? No. Okay? But I'm willing to do the work to be a blonde. Okay? A lot of people don't like when I say, oh, I'm just a fat chick in disguise. I'm sorry if somebody doesn't like that. But that's what I am. I'm a fat chick in disguise, and I'm very proud of that. Okay? So I don't believe for 1 minute that, like, this is really it. Okay? I'm really that size 24 chick. I don't care. But I'm willing to do the work to look like this because I always have this head that says, Taco Bell, Taco Bell. Do you remember the movie, A Beautiful Mind? Do you remember at the end where the lady says, are the children still there? And the man says what?
Yes.
And he says, I choose not to talk to them. Sorry, we're compulsive overeaters. It's going to be with us. It's not a cold. So, that's have a high-risk situation. Another thing is there's going to come times where, like, you might get the feeling, what's that? What?
I smell fire.
Yes, I smell fire.
Does somebody want to check that out? Does it smell like a nice burning thing? I think it smells wonderful. Do you want the door open?
Yes.
Okay. So anyhow, I think that it's important. There's going to come days where you're going to go, I can't eat that food anymore. I can't eat it. You ever been there?
Yeah.
Okay? So it's important to write down a quick alternative so that you don't have to go to Taco Bell. Okay? So for me, like, my safeguard is I can go to the grocery store salad bar. And I know in that salad bar I can get a nice full meal, I can get a healthy meal, I can get a good meal, and I can get the satisfying meal. Guilt-free. Got that? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't take me out. So it's very important to know who you are in those situations. Can anybody else give any other suggestions for like a high-risk situations? Microphone girl. And then what?
Well, then I distract myself.
Okay, and then what do you do?
Then I do something else. I go for a walk or I call my sponsor.
Okay. Okay, so... Okay, so plan what you will say, do, and have several backup strategies. So she calls her sponsor, she breathes. And what else did you say?
Take a walk.
Okay, now that works for her, okay? That would not work for me. Okay, it's really important to know who you are. Okay, you know how some people say, oh, take a bath? Well, give me the Doritos and bean dip. I'd love to take a bath. Give me a candle? Forget it. So it's really important to know who you are and what works for you. Don't do something that works for somebody else and you know it doesn't work for you. Okay? But she knows herself that breathing and taking a walk works for her. Okay?
Always head out. Pray, ask God for help, unearth the problem, speak to someone, and get out the emotion. That's your pause. And if it isn't your sponsor, pick up the phone and call somebody else that's safe. Have your phone list in your phone and put OA next to it so that you're safe. That's my take along. Take mm-hmm. my phone wherever I go anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's my safety.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is if I get a chance, run away to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't have a place safe wherever I am, I'm going to be alone in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Mm-hmm. So, and for high-risk situations for me is travel. So I always plan my travel way in advance. I plan my food in advance. And so I go, okay, so we're going out to dinner for this. We're going out for this. And so we're, you know, so I'll bring a breakfast for this. We'll go out for dinner. So because I can't eat out and have three big meals. It's like I want to go, okay, a smaller meal here, this meal that size, this big meal there. And I also, like even just coming up here, even though it's an OA event, I still don't trust you guys to take care of me because whose responsibility is it to take care of me?
You.
Me, okay? So, and because I came up late, had a problem with the car renting, you know, the whole, that, geez. And so I pack those bars, and there's bars that I eat, you know, they don't set me off. Now somebody else looks like a candy bar, tastes like candy bar. Quacks like candy bars, candy bar to them, okay? Does not get me going, does not do anything, does not do it for me. Sorry. Okay, so I bring that and beef jerky. And so coming up here, so last night, I didn't get dinner. My dinner was like a yucky bar and some beef jerky. This morning, man, I was so tired. I was like, I got to get to breakfast, man. I hope they got some good protein. I was so tired. It was like, sure, it's like eat or sleep, okay? It's like, man, I needed sleep. I go, man, I can go for the beef jerky. And it was like, man, I had the beef jerky and a protein bar. And I said, Tim, if you can find me a protein drink today while you're out, man, please do it. Cause I can't do this again tomorrow. I hope I can make it to lunch. So finally at lunch, I go, and I probably had the biggest plate of lunch there, but it's like, I didn't care. I was really, you know, it was like, I got to take care of myself. All right. So you plan for high risk situation. So somebody else had another, yeah.
Being alone with the TV at night.
What do you do?
Call somebody. That's the best thing I can do. Turn the TV off.
Okay.
Really great.
Okay. Great. Over here. First her, then her. First, go ahead. You've got the mic. Go ahead.
Well, I have a lot of kids, and they have a swim team, and there was this one night. It was called Carbo Night, okay? Get a clue, right? Okay, so what I did was I ate dinner first and decided that was my meal for the night, and I wasn't going to eat there, so I didn't get started.
Right.
That worked good. Another time we went to a going away party, and I didn't know what was going to be there. It was a dinner. So I texted my sponsor saying, I'm going to commit to you what I'm going to eat when I get there, so I could see what was there. And I couldn't see everything, but I committed no alcohol because I knew that would get me started on the wrong track. That takes down my inhibition. Lets me eat more. So I just said no alcohol. I had this stupid diet soda. It was gross. And I even texted that. I'm drinking this gross diet soda. I don't even like it. But, I had that instead of a drink. And then when the food started, I said, well, I'm just going to commit to eating a moderate meal. That's because I can't see everything this year. But it worked. And that got me through. But I've been blindsided before going on vacation.
Tell us about that so we can share with us so that we can learn. Share that.
I was going to Phoenix to visit my birth mother. I couldn't leave last January. And I didn't really have a plan. And so I wasn't really taking care of myself. I was driving because my husband's back was bad. So I did probably close to 2,000 miles of driving in about a week. And we were at a hotel that provided breakfast, and I thought there were certain things there that I don't normally eat. They're not on my food plan, and I thought I could handle one. And I thought I could handle it again the next day.
There's Jim.
Yeah.
Okay, there's Jim.
By the time we were going home, I was so determined that we were going to get home, I didn't want to stop at anywhere to, go around. My husband wanted to look at this gym show, and I'm just like, no, I just got to get to hobby, and I'm driving, going in. And it was just completely miserable, and it didn't dawn on me until we were in, like, Bakersfield, going back to that the reason I was so miserable is because what I had been eating, and it was just that was a real wake up call.
And can you qualify for us?
Yeah, I'm Lori, a compulsive overeater. Hello, broccoli.
Had to get that in there.
My top weight was about 225, 230. I couldn't see the scale. I was so pregnant. I used to eat for, when I was pregnant, that was my license to eat for four, not just two. It was me, the baby, and Ben and Jerry. I didn't come into OA at my highest weight. I only had about 20 pounds to lose, but I was on my way back up, and I was at an extreme emotional bottom.
Okay, how long have you been at a healthy body weight?
Since about June of 2011.
Okay. See how she still has insane ideas. She still has insane ideas coming to her in the form of common sense. Okay. See how she shared that without shame? She wants to share it with you so that you learn. She wants you to know, like I want you to know, it will always be with you. But you can peacefully coexist with it. Okay? All right. Thank you, broccoli girl. Okay. And then someone else up here. There we go. Yeah.
Many times I just drink water, and I find just a big, cool glass of ice water, and I find out I wasn't hungry. I was thirsty.
90% of the time, I'm just thirsty.
Thank you. And let me tell you something. When I had all these surgeries with breast cancer, I had a total of either 7 or 8 surgeries. And it really creeped me out to have all this anesthesia pumped into my body. And to, you know, it grossed me out. And so I really wanted it out of my body. So I would buy that, I bought that, I don't want to be brand specific because I don't want to endorse or whatever. So I bought that electrolyte water because it really does taste really good. So I would literally chug that water so it would flush all that out of my body. And what I found out, if I chugged a liter of that early in the morning, I had no appetite all day. I discovered that and I was like, really? Why don't they publish this? And so I really try and drink 3 liters of water a day. And it really does affect the whole appetite thing. It just, not that. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, we are out of time. I thank you so much for sharing. We could really spend lots and lots of time on that. I want to, we're going to close on this note. Oh, I have so many things to share with you, but that's all. You'll have to come to another ABCs because I have many, many things to share. I love this. Just remember, it was never between you and them anyway. You know how, what is my acronym for them? Okay, them. Because there's no them anymore, right? As little kids, it was always them. They and them. Because that's who we wanted to be. Well, they're doing it and them and blah, blah, blah. Okay, there's no them anymore. T-H-E-M. Thoughts, having emotional mantras. It was never between you and them anyway. People are often unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people may accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you are successful, you'll win some false friends and some true enemies. Succeed anyway. If you are honest and frank, people may cheat you. Be honest and frank anyway. What you spend years building, someone could destroy overnight. Build anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, they may be jealous. Be happy anyway. The good you do today, people will often forget tomorrow. Do good anyway. Give the world the best you have. It may never be enough. Give the world the best you've got anyway. You see, in the final analysis, it is between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway. Mother Teresa. Thank you. Okay, let's stand up, join hands. Okay, what a lovely day to spend with you all again. Okay. Who would like to lead us in a closing prayer tonight? Who's going to lead us in a closing prayer? Who's going to lead us in a closing prayer? Great.
So,
God, give me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. Keep coming back. It works if you work it, so work it. Woohoo! Good night.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Sherry, do you know Ernest Holmes?
Wait. He has to turn me on. Wait. Or unplug me. Rick. Call Rick.
Turn me off.
Rick, turn me off.
Do you know Ernest Holmes?
I know that name. Okay. I know that name. Hold on, let me get him to unplug me. Let me get him to unplug me. Okay.
Peaceful coexistence.
Ever.